never filtered, always fun.
I'll say this, you guys, I'm not in the best of moods because of the recent issues I've run through, and if I walk in here with a cane, I will go Angelo Mosca on one of you two if you piss me off. I'll happily smack you right in the
with
temple.
With a cane just going nuts.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Craig Button's in here. Noodles is calling the Ottawa game tonight. Erik Karlsson won't play. Rob Gronkowski won't play.
That sucks, man.
Gronk is out for the Pats.
Well, didn't he make a catch? I don't know if it was last week or he landed on his shoulder or something. It wasn't good.
But this is a thigh injury. You know something is coming up. He's like Frankenstein. Like, he's just put together, and it's awkward. He's big. He's a beast. He gets hit. He takes a beating. You know he's going to miss starts. This is inevitable. I mean, we had a Jerry's percentage a couple of weeks ago. Will he play in 14 of the 16 games? And I think we were all really low on that because that's how Gronk rolls. He gets injured. He misses
games. He's such a specimen, and he's so talented that he draws so much attention. It's just...
I know what he's going through. Yeah. I'm dealing with it myself with the bad knee.
Your knee is a mess, dude. I saw you walking in and out of here. I don't know if you went to clean your apple or what you did.
Well, he wasn't talking about the injury. He deals with being a specimen like Gronkowski.
Right, I'm built like
he's
that.
He's dealing with that same thing.
An Adonis.
Yeah.
No, my knee is a joke. I mean, I ditched the crutches because of last night. I like to believe I'm not...
I felt for you when you left the Mill Street pub. It started pissing down rain.
Was that not a walk of shame, though, too? We're set up all the way at the back of the beer hall at
the Mill Street. By the way, next time we go on, like, location, I'll be determining the location we set up on.
I got in there. I knew we'd be in the back. So, Craig, we're way in the back, right? And it's 6:30. We're out of there for the pregame. And a bunch of people came down to hang out from work, but also just fans of the show and listeners and all that. And I was saying this yesterday. I felt kind of like a jackass because I never got up to talk to people because I can't motor around. I got a bad knee. So after the show, I get the crutches out. I'm trying to walk through the crowd. And it was embarrassing, man. I looked so stupid. I felt stupid. They've got the different, I don't know, what would you call the concrete down there? Cobblestone? It's cobblestone down in the distillery. So I'm walking around on the cobblestone. It was pouring rain the second I walked out of Mill Street. And I'm on crutches. So that was it. I said, I'm done. I'm walking. I don't care.
I'm just happy it didn't happen last Thursday night.
In Barrie, Ontario.
Brian Hayes night.
That you were there to witness the Brian Hayes appreciation.
You didn't see me. I had that
I was laughing. Yeah. And let me just get something straight here. Okay, you guys have been telling everybody that I gave you the Heisman
well,
and everything.
You
I
did gave not. Us a horse eye.
I did not. I came in and I was looking for you guys. I had no idea where you were, and then I just was sitting in there, and then you guys come flying in there, and you were accusing me before you even had a chance to embrace you guys.
We were pretty energized. Yeah. At that point, too. We had a couple of drinks in us. We were going out to drop the puck. And so you're saying we caught you off guard a little bit.
Well, I'd been looking. I just, at that point in time, I was off guard. Because I'd looked for you just ahead of that. And I didn't know where you were. And I'd come in the one side, then the other end. And then, anyway.
It was good to see you up
but
there.
But then I came and found you.
You found us. Yeah. We were hanging out in between periods. Yeah. And Colts got a big win in overtime that night. So Barry's actually off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, they got some good players. They got some good players.
Yeah, they're starting to turn things up.
Good turnaround for Dale Hawerchuk there.
Good turnaround for Dale, Hall of Famer. Obviously, we're coming off the opening night in the NHL, and Connor McDavid put on a clinic last night. He absolutely dominated. Hat trick. His second goal was brilliant. He's a man-made breakaway. Like, he's just a human breakaway. He just creates breakaways.
Well, Ray Ferraro talked about that goal. He said he was mesmerized by watching him skate. He said he turned to Cammy, his wife, and said, it's unbelievable. But, you know, Jeff, and I mean, you could score. I mean, how he put that puck in the net, it's almost like he took the puck and just, like, placed it there. Yeah. Like, made it look. That puck was on end right up until the time.
Like a Datsuk goal, where he just kind of flips it up in the air, and it's at an angle where the goaltender has no chance, and you're just like, you're better than everybody else.
Well, what's Mike Smith going to do there? I mean, we don't look at it through their eyes. We think of TJ Brody and Hamonic and whoever else is on the ice chasing him. But if you're a goalie and you're seeing a guy skate at you at a pace you've never seen before, you've never witnessed a guy skate at you at that pace.
Well, I witnessed it with playing Pittsburgh early in my career. When you play against somebody like Mario Lemieux, when he was on top of his game, you're just looking at him saying, none of us have a chance against that. Like, it's so good. It's so much better than everyone else. Eric Lindros in his prime, same thing. He would do it a different way. The physicality and the dominance. It was just like, if this guy's on top of his game tonight, there's basically no chance. That's the way it was going to go, and you had no chance. And right now, when McDavid's on his game, you have no chance.
How far off is Matthews from that territory?
I think he's very close. He's going to be a different type of dominant player, though. I don't think their team is ever going to be I think Babcock believes in it, and you can only win like this, where it's... He is never going to say, Austin Matthews, you're going to play 21 minutes a night, and you got to get the job done, or we have no chance. I don't think the Edmonton Oilers are kind of far away from that. They're like, they got some depth, they got some good players, but you saw last night, if McDavid isn't going, who else really was?
Yeah, the Leafs are a deeper team. Yeah.
That's right.
They're absolutely a deeper team. Like, I mean, Cam Talbot, I think you could argue, is better goalie than Freddie
Anderson.
Things
that Matthews will get credit for within his own team and his coaches, that the hockey fan or the people watching SportsCenter, there's not too many the details of his game. He plays both ends. Like Jonathan Toews, you don't see him on too many highlight packs anymore. But you know what? You watch him play hockey, he's a hell of a hockey player, but there's a lot of stuff he's never going to get credit for. A lot of stuff that doesn't show up in the highlights.
How I would compare it is in the 70s, and I'm aging myself, but in the 70s, you had Guy Lafleur, who was unbelievably exciting, played off of instinct. I mean, he was a natural player. Then you had Bob Clark, who won 3 Hart trophies. And you couldn't find anybody, 2 players more different than Bobby Clark and Guy Lafleur. But yet they were both instrumental to their team's success, right? And they both were recognized as the most valuable players in the league. That's how I would, in my own mind, that's how I kind of see, I mean, you could put Brian Trottier maybe into that, but Bob Clark won 3 Hart trophies. And to me, that's how I would differentiate between Matthews. To support Jeff's comment that Matthews is in that conversation, you know, I don't think anybody's trying to say that he does the same things, but some of the things that Matthews does, Connor doesn't do as well.
Right. Yeah, well, using his body to shield. Yeah. I mean, what he did last night in a relatively quiet 5-on-5 game simply because of the amount of penalties that the Leafs took. They took 8 penalties. You couldn't get a rhythm. Matthews didn't play a ton of minutes. Still walked away with 3 points. And his hand-eye was on display. What he can do with the puck, I think his skills with the puck in terms of just his hands are actually probably more advanced than what McDavid can do. But McDavid he's supplying a level of speed and skill when he's at that pace that we've just never seen before. But Matthews last night, I thought the backhand sauce to Marleau, that's a brilliantly skilled play. The tip,
for guys that have boomerang curves on their sticks right now,
for him to be able to do that.
It's an unbelievable pass. Mm-hmm. It's a good pickup by Marleau, and the hands after that's incredible, but the backhand sausage at a high rate of speed is not everybody's game.
No, it's not easy to do, and Matthews, he will perform that way, and he will continue to perform that way, and they both walked away with 3 points. I mean, very different style of game, as we pointed out, but I think that's where the league is trending. I mean, Sid played last night. Sid put on a show himself. It's still Sid's league in the eyes of the players. McDavid said that before. I think every player in the league would still say, I'm looking at Sid. At least publicly, they continue, out of respect to Sid, to say he's the man, he's been the man for a long time. Until someone officially knocks him off, he will be the man. But Sid's 30 now, 29, 30. I mean, McDavid's
30, just turned 30.
Just turned 30. McDavid is 19, turning 20. Matthews is 20.
No, McDavid.
They're both 20.
McDavid will turn 21 in January.
Okay, so there you go. They're both 20 right now.
Yeah.
So they've got 10 years on Sid. Or Sid's got 10 years on them. At some point, it is going to turn over. We know that McDavid is going to be the guy. But more often than not in this league's history, it's a two-headed monster. You know, there's a couple of different guys battling it out. You just mentioned Lafleur and Clark. I think McDavid has define himself as a step above where Matthews and these other kids are at, but I think Matthews at this point, and I believe throughout the season, will elevate above the other kids. I think by the end of the year, it's not going to be, hey, who would you take, Eichel or Matthews? I think it'll be defined.
Yeah. Well, when you even consider the Nylander goal last night, so Matthews comes out of the corner and Byfuglien is chasing. Now, Byfuglien is a big man. He couldn't get close to Matthews. He couldn't push him into an area. He was going to get a penalty. There was a delayed penalty. And then he pulls Byfuglien all the way up there. And he just makes a little backhand pass to Gardner. Boom, down to Nylander. I mean, those are the things that Matthews does, like a little bit with the body and the size. And
one thing I'll say about Dustin Byfuglien, it's been about 4 or 5 years now, and he's got a big contract now. And at the end of the day, I still don't think he's in shape. Or in good, I don't think he's in tip-top shape. There's no way. There's no way.
Well, what I've noticed about him, and you guys probably focused on him more than I have. I don't watch him every night. But I find when he really gets mean, it's when they're losing.
Wow.
I don't see him that mean when they're up 3-1. Like last night, he was getting pissed off and he was throwing his body around. He laid out Hyman. They were down 5-0.
Shift of the game.
It's a frustrated Matt. And I don't like frustrated men.
Right.
I want people that can initiate when it matters.
That's what
I've noticed. Not when you're down on the mat and you know your team is behind. Like, you know what?
Well, a lot of times, Craig, the competition element of the game is already gone. So what the hell's the sense?
You know, one of the things, and you know, I like Dustin Byfuglien because I think he's a unique player.
I do too.
But I think one of the things about the Winnipeg Jets that I continuously see time and time again, they don't have much positional discipline. Ray Ferraro talked about them being shredded through the middle of the ice. Players behind them in the defensive zone all the time, right? And to me, they kind of they have this looseness about them. And Buff does have a looseness about them. And I don't think you're trying to change it, but how do you get your team to play with a lot more what I would call detail? I think they lack a lot of detail in Winnipeg.
Well, that was what the Leafs were a few years ago when Carlisle was here. And Carlisle kept saying a lot of the same things that I've heard Maurice say. We know what the issues are. We know how to attack them. But they just never attack them. They never overcome the issues. The Leafs could never overcome
their problems. How many times did old Randy say, again, it's, you know,
I'm telling them. I keep telling them, but they won't do it.
The competition in our own end, again, they're not doing it. And then I'm like,
he said it 55,000 times.
A million times.
And it never changed. And Maurice is going down the same road, and nothing has changed.
That's right.
And, I mean, the focus, because of what we do in the hockey world, is we do look at goaltenders, and Steve Mason does not have the greatest track record. And I thought he played poorly last night. And then he gets pulled. I'm sure that is actually maybe alleviating some of that overall team pressure because Mason is the whipping boy now. Like after one game, he's in the doghouse. And I'll be quite curious to see what Maurice does from here. I mean, most people just assume that Hellebuck is going back in, but if Mason was your guy before the game last night, 40 minutes and 38 seconds changes your mind? Well, what does that really say about how you felt about him to begin with?
For a little bit here, you're saying, okay, Hellebuck, it's your time to kind of get things done here.
But it's like making a quarterback change. Like, remember the Texans, they decided to go with Tom Savage instead of Deshaun Watson, and he was brutal. And they got smoked game one. He got pulled in the second half, and they said, forget it, Watson, go in. That turned out to be the right move. But Bill O'Brien at the time took a lot of heat because people are like, why didn't you just put Watson in to begin with? Why would you have faith in Tom Savage? We know who that guy is. We know who Steve Mason is. So why did you play him if you can change your mind that drastically after 40 minutes?
And
40 minutes can change your mind.
Well, let me say this, too, about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think it goes to their ability, their strength in saying, and it happened last year, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Connor Brown, Hyman, Zaitsev, you're on our team. Like, they didn't just hand them the spot. I'm not sure. But they said, you know what? There's going to be growing. I mean, there's going to be pain, but this is how we're going to go about it. And they were committed to it. You know, I chuckle when I see teams that are sitting down and like, oh, no, we're going to go with the older guy, or we're not going to play. We want to BS. It's over. These kids know. I'm watching in Calgary. It's a joke that Mark Jankowski isn't on the team.
Yeah.
It's a joke. He should be on that team. He's exactly what they need, a big centerman, and now he can play out. It's a joke. They got guys that, like, it's just...
You find a place to put him. Put him on the wing. Put him somewhere.
Exactly.
Well, and apparently you need Tanner Glass on that.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, so you keep going down these paths, and it's like, okay, go down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I know, and I'm not suggesting that coaches aren't trying to win or anything like that, but I mean, I think that organizations, you know, sometimes do things that are not in their best interest because they have ideas in their head.
The conventional wisdom would say, yeah, but you're right, the game has changed.
It has. The life has changed. The world has changed.
Yep. It's a fast game. It's a young man's game. And, the Leafs, you can use as an example because they threw those kids into the pool. And guess what also happened with it? The veterans got dragged up, too. Because the vets said, you know what? These kids are going to blow past me. I better step up here if I'm Kadri, JVR, Bozak. I better keep up or I'm out.
Did you hear what Marlow said about coming into this group? He said, he goes, you know they're good. You know they're talented. He says, boy, he goes, they're driven to be better and practice. They want to get better. They're working on their game. They're working on making sure that they're elevating again. I mean, Patrick Marlow's been in the league for 20 years.
Right.
He's coming in and he's going, well, like it's and Patrick isn't one of these faint praise guys. I mean, if he's saying it, take it to the bank. Take it to the bank.
Yeah, that was a big game for them last night. Marlow Potten, too, was...
The Maple Leafs have the best young core in hockey.
You're going down that path?
Another shot for Noodles.
Oh, Noodles, you know, that would...
We should get Joe from the Bridge, if you're in the building, come over here and give us some thoughts about last night's game, yeah. And we'll write them down for Noodles.
What cooks your noodle? Is that how you phrased it?
Which one of these cooks your noodle the most?
All right, Jim Popp, GM of the Argos, later in the hour. Bobby Mack in studio next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app and on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Craig Button, the O-Dog Jeff O'Neill, and Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider in studio.
And we want to add Bobby to the mix. Do you have any outlandish comments that will drive Noodles crazy about the Toronto Maple Leafs after Game 1?
Oh, is Noodles upset? He's doing the... Toronto's the center of the universe. I'm from West.
If he was in here today, he would be telling us to calm down.
Yeah.
He's the voice of reason.
So give us one comment where you can say, Bob McKenzie said this.
That game went the way I think a lot of Leaf games will go. And that is, simply put, that they don't need a lot of chances. You saw Winnipeg.
They were horrible.
They were horrible, and they also had like 17 scoring chances in the first 20 minutes, most of them on the power play, and they couldn't beat Freddie Anderson, and it was like they punched themselves out, and Toronto's like, okay, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Toronto power play, boom, scores, 1-0. People talk about their top nine, and rightfully so. So, listen, I'm the last guy in the world to sit here and say plan the parade route or anything else. You got to make the playoffs first, and the Leafs aren't guaranteed to make the playoffs, like a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference. But I'll tell you what you saw last night is going to happen a lot of nights where they physically overwhelm teams, especially if the goaltender's as good as he was in the early going. Last year, remember, the season started... And Anderson was coming off the injury at the World Cup. He didn't look comfortable. People were wondering, first few weeks, that was the big question. Oh, did they make a mistake giving this guy all these years? And I think he's comfortable, and he's going to be good. And that's going to put points in the bank that'll help the Leafs be a playoff team this year.
How far are they away? But I know Mike Babcock has said that, you know, you want to be in the summertime and go, we're in the playoffs. We know we're a playoff team, like those Detroit teams. I mean, with the parity in the league, is it like what do they have to do to get into that?
I'm just not sure with the way the game's structured. Yeah. Now, listen, there's teams, like, let's be honest. The Colorado Avalanche, they're not making the playoffs. Right. Vancouver Canucks, they're not making the playoffs. I don't think the New Jersey Devils are making the playoffs, but you know what? I just don't know. And so you're always... You know, I don't think Buffalo's necessarily a playoff team, but if Jack Eichel's healthy all year and they've made some changes, they weren't that far off the mark last year with a month to go in the season and in a year where Jack Eichel missed the first 20 games. So I don't know. I don't think I think even the good teams, you know, Montreal's got Carey Price, so they think, yeah, we're going to make the playoffs. But I don't know very many teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, Columbus for me is a playoff team. They'll be there unless things go horribly wrong for them. But I mean, you know, the Leafs aren't that good that if they lost one of their big boys, you would automatically assume, oh, well, they'll just roll through without any problems.
I think from an offensive standpoint, there's only a few teams in the East, though, that can really play with them when they're rolling. I mean, Pitt can still do that. Washington, a lot of people are claiming that Washington is done or for some reason that their better days are behind them. And that may be the case, but they're still loaded with talent.
Yeah, they are. They got a really nice – their top six is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they've got – I think they're playing Burakovsky, Backstrom, and Oshie. That's a real nice first line. And on the second line, you've got Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and Jacob Vrana, who's a real good young player. So their top six is great. Where are they, you know, with Justin Williams gone and moving things like they move them, they've still got, they got Connolly on their third line. They've got Eller on their third line. So two-thirds of it from last year is basically there, although Connolly sometimes dropped down as a fourth liner. But they lack the ability to have the Justin Williams and some of the players that insulated them. And they've got more guys that, you know, you wonder about. Alex Chiasson, Devontae Smith-Pelly, you know, question marks in the bottom half of the thing. And on defense, they lose Alzner, who's a top four defenseman. But he's not a high, high, high impact guy. But he was a big minute guy for them. And they've moved Orpik back into the top four. So does that diminish them a little bit? So I think the questions about the window, is it closed? I wouldn't say it's closed because they were such a good team last year. The President's Trophy team, and they're not as good as they were a year ago. But what if all it takes is to lower the expectations, have them not be at the top end, and maybe be in a wild card spot instead of up at the top of the division and having to go through? What if they end up on the other side? What if they suddenly end up and
play Montreal,
and they're
the
playing Montreal
or
Ottawa or Toronto or Tampa or Florida and go up through that way? And what if somebody else knocks the Penguins off for a change? And I mean, what would have happened last year if Washington had come up the other side and Pittsburgh did get knocked out by Ottawa? What if it was a Washington-Ottawa conference final last year? Maybe the only thing that's standing in the way of the Washington Capitals being in the Stanley Cup final the last 2 years was the team that won it, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, their nemesis. What if somehow the Penguins miraculously disappear off the Washington radar, or Washington finds a way to avoid them in the playoffs? Does it change the dynamic and maybe with a lowered expectation make them a team that is still a viable team to win the cup? Maybe it is.
I think San Jose did that a couple of years ago where I don't think the expectation was there and they made it to the finals. Because there
was
so many
decade.
Years where everyone was like, San Jose is going to win the Stanley Cup. And you know what? They could never get it done.
And then when the year they weren't supposed to and it was all over for them, they got there.
I'll give you an example, and Bob, you'll remember, I think everybody here will remember. The Detroit Red Wings in 95, in the lockout, really good team, lost four straight. They came back the next year, they were lights out, the best team in the league, president, and then they got beat by Colorado. And expectations were probably a little bit lower in 97 when they finally broke through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
So it's interesting because I don't think by any stretch Washington's crap.
No, neither.
But I also don't think they're as good as they were last year. And They had to make a decision this summer. Are we going to try to hold on? Are we going to we're saying the window hasn't closed. We think we're still okay. We know we're not as good, and they are psychologically. There's, if you listen to all the comments from Barry Trotz, the players, they're psychologically scarred by what's happened these last 2 years. They got to get a headspace that works for them, because the sense right now is that this is a, there's almost a shattered psyche there. They're picking up the pieces of what happened to them in back-to-back years with Pittsburgh. And so I don't know. You know, they're still a decent team, and they still could be heard from, but they were trying to hang on to that thing, and so they go out and they do the Oshie deal. And right now I still like the Oshie deal. I like the fact he's in their top six. It gives them a chance. And that, but if they keep getting further and further away, that Oshie deal is going to look worse and worse and worse as the years go by, and they're not backup still where they need to be a legit mix. Threat.
Last night, at least in this country, I mean, the two stories that had people going was the Maple Leafs putting a touchdown on the board in Winnipeg and shutting up a really loud crowd. And then what McDavid did in the doubleheader, hat trick for him.
Yikes.
The second goal where he kind of creates a turnover and then goes, 180 feet and at 41 kilometers an hour at peak speed. I mean, we were joking about that earlier. There are side streets in Toronto. You got to drive slower than he was skating with
the puck. TJ Brody's going to have nightmares about him. He was on for, all three, I guess? Mm-hmm. And he lost him on the first goal. And but you know what? And in fairness, I mean, Brody's a good skater.
Mm-hmm. I said that earlier.
He's a really good skater. And that was a...
We said he looks like a guy from Westwood Arenas playing on 10 o'clock on Sundays.
That was the breakaway. We could call that a breakaway before it was even a breakaway. As soon as McDavid took off from the hash marks on the face-off circle in his own end, you looked at it and you go, they're not going to be able to stop.
Well, Craig was talking about, I think it was Darian Hatcher with Team Mussolini. I've never seen defensemen turn around and start skating forward so quickly.
Yeah.
They have no choice.
It's like, whoa. But even then, it was like, and Brody's a good skater, and he turned, and he went. And he got
no chance.
And by the time he looked over his shoulder, McDavid was already by him.
Well, Bob, you saw him in midget, and you saw him in junior, and I did too. And defensemen used to start turning when he was 15 feet away from him. And watching that game last night, I had the same feeling.
Exactly, but the scary thing is these are the best players in the world. This is the National Hockey League. There's no league above him. Like, we can't start a new league just for him.
He can't move higher.
Because he's so fast. When he was 18 years old, he hadn't played a game in the National Hockey League. He was at the BioSteel camp over at St. Mike's in August, and there's NHLers that are there. And I won't mention the NHL defenseman's name, but during that BioSteel thing, McDavid, on several occasions, went by this National Hockey League defenseman who's a good skater and a good defenseman, and went by him like he wasn't even there. He turnstiled him on multiple occasions. And the NHL defenseman, when it was over, was walking out and shook the kid's hands. And keep in mind, he's 18 years old. He hasn't played a game in the National Hockey League. This other guy's been in the NHL for a bit. And he shakes his hand and he goes, and he knows he's going to be playing him. And he's like, hey, man, take it easy on me.
Slow down.
And because it's otherworldly.
Well,
we've never seen anything like it, I don't think. Pavel Bure was really something special. And could really skate fast with the puck on his stick.
I watched it. I chased him. It's not even close.
Yeah, and I don't think it is either.
No.
And it's only going to get... He's 20.
That's the amazing thing.
I mean, he's 20. He's not... I know. He's not fully formed
yet. Yeah, like, what the hell is he going to be doing at 24 years old? Like,
yeah, so...
He'll just,
you know, and you've heard the stories. I mean,
different.
It's a true story. He had the contract... He signed the contract.
Back in July, it was
July. I remember I was actually at a speaking engagement with LeDuc, Alberta that day. It would have been July 4th, I think. But anyways, he signed the contract that afternoon. They had a function for him that night in Edmonton. He and his family got on a plane at 6 a.m. the next morning from Edmonton, and the plane landed, and his family went home, and he went straight to see Gary Roberts at the gym. So... He's not going to fall victim to the things that some players fall victim to.
The kid's incredible.
What do you mean by that, Bob?
You know what also amazes me watching him with the puck? And I'm sure you can attest to this. Usually, it's like in basketball, some guy can cross left or he can cross right. Like, my understanding is most guys are more comfortable holding it on their backhand for whatever reason. This guy can do it like from either side of the rink. He can cut to the middle.
Yeah.
And he's got just as much control.
He was more speed. I think he was happier to score the first goal than the second goal.
Right.
Because those are not the types of goals he usually scores. He's not a rebound, get your nose dirty and go in front of the net kind of scorer, and he doesn't shoot the puck as often. And so I think those are the types of goals he's like, yeah, I got to get more of those. I think he's probably in the back of his mind saying, I can blow by everybody and get a breakaway, but I've got to work at putting myself in the right position to be there when that rebound comes out and snap it and put it in.
Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider in studio. Quickly on Vegas, they haven't played yet, but is it starting to get to a point where people are wondering what the hell they did during this draft? Because now they took Pickard, but now they've waived him. Shea Theodore, they made that deal with Anaheim. Now they can't even play him because of... what happened here?
Two separate issues. Separate the goaltending from the other stuff. The Theodore thing's very temporary. They got a bunch of defensemen. They'll move one or two. They're going to hold on because they have to with the contracts and they want the experience. They want the experience of Garrison, Sabiza, and England at the top end. And they're under contracts that other people wouldn't want anyways. That's fine. So they want those three veterans. There's three kids in the organization that are untouchable and three young defensemen. One of them is Shea Theodore. One of them is Nate Schmidt. And the other one is Colin Miller. So Theodore's not on the team. Those other two guys are. Theodore will be there in a matter of hours, days, whatever, week. Once, so take John Merrill or Griffin Reinhardt or Braden McNabb or somebody. They'll make deals for these guys. They don't have to get a ton back. They just need to open up room to get Theodore back where he belongs in their top six, and they will. So it's not that big a deal. It's just part of the growing process here in the first week of the season. Lots of teams go through it. And that. So that's that one. Now, the goaltending is a separate issue. And what it is this. They were perfectly happy with Marc-Andre Fleury as their number one and Calvin Pickard as their number two. Love it. Everything's good. Pickard's been good. They like Pickard. They know Pickard right now is a better NHL goaltender than Malcolm Subban. But Calvin Pickard is only ever going to be Marc-Andre Fleury's backup. He's not a number one goalie in the NHL. That's the scouting report on him, which is fine. Solid backup, keep him, great. When Malcolm Subban became available, the goaltending coach for the Las Vegas team, David Pryor, who's been with George McPhee dating back to their days, right from the get-go with the Washington Capitals, Pryor is of the opinion that of all the goaltenders you could get on the waiver wire, Malcolm Subban stands out because he has the athletic ability to perhaps, with a reconstruction year, if you want to call it that, be the future number one goalie of the Golden Knights. That he might take the baton from Marc-Andre Fleury in a couple of years.
It's interesting, the thought process. This guy couldn't win a job over Hudobin.
That's right. He was number four goalie
in Boston.
And
all of a sudden somebody else thinks he could be the...
But David Pryor, I worked with David Pryor, and I know David very well. I'll tell you what, when they picked him up, immediately you're going, David's put a stamp on him. And David doesn't just identify goaltenders. He really understands what he feels he can develop in those goaltenders. And I think it's significant. David has a track record that's as long as my arm of success.
Yeah, David Pryor and George McPhee are not saying we're smarter than everybody else. Malcolm Subban's the number one goalie in the NHL. What they're saying is, we believe Malcolm Subban, if we work really hard with him for a year, has a chance to be a number one goaltender and a stud number one goaltender. They're not saying this, I'm saying it. They don't feel the same way about Pickard. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, we're arguing about a backup goaltender
right,
and an expansion team that's not going to win many games unless Marc-Andre Fleury stands on his head. And I'm not saying they're tanking. I don't think they'll need to tank. It's an expansion team. Nobody expects them to be any good. So are people really going to get bent out of shape and say, well, they took Pickard in the expansion draft. They're kind of locked in. They should be using him as the backup. So Fleury's going to play 60 games. So the 22 games that Pickard was going to play, I don't know how many of them they were going to win, but how many more games are they going to lose because it's Malcolm Subban who's getting tutored to try and be a number one 2 years from now. So I don't know.
And he's a 23-year-old goaltender. Right, and if you're an expansion team, these are the types of chances you have to take. I think.
And everybody assumes that Pickard's going to get claimed tomorrow. We'll see. Maybe not.
We will. I'm sure Colorado probably looks back on it maybe a bit differently, but we'll see. Good seeing you, Bob. As always, we'll do it again early next week.
Thanks, guys.
Here's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. Argos with a chance to wrap up a playoff spot. They're sitting atop the East. Saskatchewan in town on Saturday. We'll tee it up with the GM, Jim Popp, next. Don't forget, listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs Lunch or Leafs Lineup Player of the Day, whatever you want to call it. On Friday, call with the names of all five players, and you can win a pair of lower bowl tickets to see the Leafs take on the Blackhawks Monday night down at the ACC. So we're giving that away tomorrow. The theme this week is players who have played for both the Leafs and Chicago. And today's Maple Leaf lineup player of the day, brought to you by Upper Deck, is Dougie Gilmore. Dougie Gilmore.
Pea soup.
Pea soup and a tuna sandy and six assists against your Dallas Stars. I guess there was Minnesota, I think, Minnesota, still at that point. Were you in the building for Dougie putting up six assists that
day? No, but we really tried hard to get him in Minnesota. And Cliff obviously made a great deal, and Cliff knew him, and it's interesting. He knew that whole organization in Calgary. As hard as we tried, we just couldn't come close.
Yeah, that one worked out pretty well for the Leafs.
How the hell did you not come close with what Toronto gave up?
Well, it was because they trusted Cliff. They trusted, and then a bunch of Toronto scouts had gone over to Calgary, so they were telling the Flames that what great
Gotta
players these
Gary
young
Lehman
guys were.
And,
yeah. Alexander Gedinyuk and everything. So, and Cliff just exploited it to the nth degree.
Oh, Cliffy pulled a fast one on Calgary.
Merci, Cliffy.
Let's bring in the GM of the Argos. The Argos back in action this weekend down at BMO Saskatchewan in town. Here's Jim Popp. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing well. We're just talking about GMs fleecing other GMs on trades. How many of those have you pulled off in your career?
You're always trying to win them. There's no question. But I have no idea. That's for other people to judge. But I feel pretty good about most of them.
There's got to be one, though, that sticks out where you're like, I won that one, clearly. Like, what's your most favorable trade?
Mike Pringle.
Mike Pringle.
Yeah, I can honestly say I won that one because actually Mike Pringle was a throw-in on the trade, and then he becomes the all-time leading rusher in the CFL.
Yeah, that one works. That'll work.
How did you acquire Ben Cahoon?
Drafted him through the CFL draft.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would have been a good one, too, I think.
Yeah, that was. Now, was there a lot of talk about undersized or underspeed with Ben?
It was just a situation in Montreal. We had no Canadian receivers that we needed to build the franchise with, and he was so technically sound. He was a small guy, but it was hard to turn him down because he was so well coached. And, once we got him, he was even better than advertised from what we watched, and the rest is history.
So when you talk, just quickly, Jim, but, they talk about Brady and Edelman. Did Cavillo and Cahoon have that same type of chemistry on the field, and obviously they had great success together?
They did. When I knew even before them with Tracy Hamm and Chris Armstrong, they just knew each other's movement. But Ben was that way, and AC always had that just confidence that I need 2 yards or I need 10 or I need whatever – Ben Cahoon was going to get open. You can talk about all the great catches, everything he did, but the one thing he was just phenomenal at is when he came out of his break, he could create 2 yards of separation. And when you add that with the great hands, AC would just stick it in there. And, 99.9% of the time, Ben made that catch.
Argos Riders this Saturday down at BMO. You guys are sitting atop the Eastern Conference. How comfortable do you feel with the idea that you have the best team in the East?
Well, what I can say is that we've played all three teams. We won all three series. We played Ottawa early. That's a big deal to do that. We were able to accomplish that. Now, we haven't technically won our division yet, so every game we're playing right now is like a playoff game, and/or it's more important than any game we've had this year. So, we're up against a team that's actually trying to survive to stay in the playoff race themselves, and they're right in the thick and middle of it, not just in their division, but in our division. So, it should be quite a battle.
And it sounds like Trent Richardson will make his debut. What are you expecting out of a beast at Alabama, a guy who had a good rookie campaign with the Browns, but he's making his CFL debut. When you see guys of that stature, his size, how does that change the way you defend against a team like the Riders?
Last week Hamilton ran the ball on us, and they're going to do the same. They're going to try to take some pressure off the quarterback and play action and mix it up pretty well, and I'm sure they'll give him his dose, and he's an outstanding back. Things might not have worked the way he wanted it to in the NFL, but He has tremendous talent, and, you know, it's just like our guy, James Wilder. It didn't quite work for him, but you see what kind of talent he is. So, you know, we expect, you know, the physique and power and size that he has, that they're going to try to pound the rock on him.
We're looking forward to the game on Saturday again. Argos playing host to the Riders down at BMO. Kickoff at 4 p.m. The Argos can clinch a playoff spot in the East. Good luck this weekend. We'll do it again next week.
You got it. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great night.
There he is, GM of the Argos, Jim Popp.
I have in my possession Joe from the Bridge hot takes. Want them?
Yes.
Quickly.
Patrick Marleau's career high is 44 goals. He'll blow that out of the water. JVR has been helping the Leafs out, increasing his trade value. Is every game going to be this easy? Question mark. Matthews, Marner, and Nylander might finish 1, 2, and 3 in league scoring. Last one, Fair, Brown, and Martin is the best fourth line in the NHL.
Wow, I like that with Connor Brown making things happen on the fourth line.
Hey, how about Matt Martin last night? Did you notice what he did? And that frustration with Bufflin running around, you see what he went out and did? He went out and just served a little bit of notice to the Winnipeg Jets. And not just to the Winnipeg Jets, to everybody else in the league. Okay.
Watch yourself.
Yeah, okay. You know,
just check yourself.
Sometimes you, to be a policeman, you don't have to pull your gun. You just have to go out there and just point a menacing finger.
Let them know you have it if need be. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Prop Bet Thursday. Looking at the Thursday night or tonight, I'm over the number. Chris Hogan receptions, 4.5. Over the number total yards, 81.5 for Mike Evans. I'll go under the number, 23.5 for the longest rush. Throw down $20 and you can score 92.40. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. The best, it's the sporting betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, Craig, thanks for doing this, man.
Oh, I love being with you guys. It's always a joy.
Always a pleasure. We'll get Noodles back in here tomorrow. You know, Noodles will be aware that we've been kind of, we've been talking about him throughout the afternoon.
And tomorrow we're starting What Cooks Your Noodle?
We get him fired up. We'll be teeing up the Leaf game, the home opener on Saturday night.
You know it.
Rangers in town. Enjoy your evenings. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.